You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello everyone, welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast with me, Phil Kitramalides, and as ever, I've got Sidlow with me. Hello Sidney.
Hello Philip, how are you?
I'm alright mate, I'm here to talk about match day 24 in La Liga with you.
Well that's lucky because so am I.
Yeah, you up for that? Shall we do that?
Yeah, good
Let's
idea.
Do that. These are the results so far from match day 24 on Friday. We saw Sevilla grind out a 2-0 win at home against Elche, a big result in terms of the title race. They're now only 4 points behind leaders Real Madrid, who on Saturday drew 0-0 at the Estadio de la Cerámica against Villarreal. Before that, we'd seen another goalless draw as well between Cadiz and Celta. Celta missing a very, very late penalty, which would have given them all 3 points. Also on Saturday, Rayo's mini slump at home continues. They lost a third consecutive game in Vallecas, this time 3-0 at the hands of Osasuna. And then Saturday night at the Estadio Wanda Metropolitano saw the craziest game for a while, for a long, long time. Atletico Madrid 4, Getafe 3 is how it finished. We could do a whole podcast probably on this game, but we won't. Sunday saw Alaves win their first league game for 3 months. They beat Valencia by 2-1. Levante remain rock bottom of the table and I'll let you in on a little secret, guys. They're going down. They lost 4-2 to Real Betis, and it looks really, really bad for them. Quite the opposite for Betis, who are absolutely flying. Real Sociedad beat Granada by 2-0 to end their mini slump as well. They hadn't scored more than one goal in their own stadium this season in La Liga, La Real, but they did on Sunday to pretty comfortably beat Granada, although Granada had a couple of good chances in the first half. And then the Sunday night big game was the Catalan derby between Espanyol and Barcelona, which finished 2-2 in dramatic circumstances with Luke Young coming off the bench to score a 92nd minute equaliser for Barcelona. While I've got you, listeners, I just want to let you know that over at patreon.com/TSFP this week, we're going to have a question and answer pod answering all your questions. That'll be out tomorrow. We're also going to have a bonus podcast on Friday talking PSG Real Madrid in the Champions League, Atleti Levante in La Liga and the Europa League games, including Barca and Napoli. And don't forget to check out the free clip of our latest TSFP Presents series, At the Games, which is out now here on the Monday podcast feed. It's our series of tourist guides to going to cities in Spain and where to eat, where to watch your football, how to get there. Hopefully it's a pretty useful listen. Patreon.com/TSFP costs €4 a month. Pretty good value for all the content that you get. Sydney, let's give the listeners some content, shall we? And start talking about the Catalan derby on Sunday night, Espanyol 2, Barca 2. It basically had everything a derby should have. It was goals, there was sending off, there was hostile atmosphere, there was challenges flying in it. It had everything.
And then it had a very, very late winner from an unexpected player as well, which
was equaliser.
Yes, that's true. And actually, I suppose that means you get to this post-match thing where the inevitable question is, does this feel more like a winner or an equaliser to you? Have you dropped 2 points or have you gained one? And both teams I think at the end of it, at least claim that they felt they should have had more, which I think also adds to the feeling that this was a really good derby, because Barcelona, I think, felt that this equaliser was long coming, or at least maybe they should have put the game out of sight earlier on. Espanyol, having led for so long, because it was the best part of half an hour, then obviously caught very late on. And it was really enjoyable, really good atmosphere, a real sense of opportunity for Espanyol, which I suppose is one of the reasons why it hurt so much for them at the end when they didn't get the victory, because it's now been 24 league derbies without them winning, and that's a new Spanish record. It was, the previous record was 23, which of course was Atletico against Real Madrid.
They haven't won in their own stadium against Barcelona in the league since 2007, which is a really long time against.
Well, and that was a different stadium as well. So in the stadium they've never won a derby at Cornellà Prat.
That's true. Yeah. It's a completely different stadium in a completely different part of town as well. Luke de Jong then is the match winner, the man who got the headlines. Have you been writing about him today?
I have, yes.
Yes, understandably so. We had him on our show on La Liga TV after the game. He was, as always, just came across so well. Speaks so sincerely as well. He just seems like a really down-to-earth guy. He knows his place in the team. He said, I'm here to help. When the crosses start being pumped into the box, that's what I'm coming on to do, to try and get on the end of them. I know there are a lot of good players that have come here. I know that I'm not going to get as many minutes, but I'm here to just help. It's hard not to like someone like that.
I really do like him, and I like that part of him. There's no sense of vindication. Given the way that he has at times been dismissed, the kind of tone that's been used to talk about him, the way he's been laughed at, I think it's incredible that he's never reciprocated any of that bitterness, ever.
Yes, ever.
There's, I mean, obviously, look, in part, and I'm sure there is an argument to say this, it's partly because he realises he's at a club that's probably bigger than him, or bigger than the level he thought he would get to, that there's an acceptance of that, that there's a feeling that, look, I'll hang on for as long as I can and I'll be useful and I'm not going to aspire to do more than that because I know my limitations. I accept that there are better players than me. But I do think at times that he was treated almost as a figure of fun when he shouldn't have been. I also think that he was treated as a symbol of what was going wrong at Barcelona, which I can understand, actually, I can. If you're buying someone like Luke de Jong, it's an illustration of the fact that there's something wrong. But there's a difference, I think, between seeing him as a symbol or as a, if you like, a symptom of the issue and seeing him as the cause. And I think some people were effectively almost treating him as if he was the cause, as if this was in any way his fault. The other thing to say about him is that while his goal-scoring record hasn't always been great, it's been okay over two seasons. And in Holland, it was very good. Over two seasons at Sevilla, he scored 19 goals. Not a huge amount, spread over two seasons in all competitions. But he got big ones. He scored against Betis. He scored against Barcelona. He scored against Manchester United. He scored two in the UEFA Cup final against Inter. So this is a guy who can be useful. And of course, and this was the stat that I was asking you about earlier on today, this morning, he's now scored four times in the last five Barcelona games. And those points are the difference between a current Champions League place and being ninth.
Yep, he's directly won them 5 points with his goals. So yeah, they would be in ninth position without those goals.
By the way, I think you could argue that he's unfortunate that it's only that many, because one of those, of course, is a 1-1 draw where they get caught in the 89th minute, I think.
Yes.
So he's done his bit, if you see what I mean. And he goes off and they actually lost control when he went off.
Mm. Luke de Jong proving to be very important for Barcelona. This was a wild game because Barcelona scored after 75 seconds. Then Espanyol got themselves in front, obviously, equalising through Sergi Darder in spectacular fashion. And then Raúl de Tomás. Sorry, R.D.T. You probably don't know who Raúl de Tomás is, but you know who R.D.T. is. He scored his 13th league goal of the season after some pretty questionable defending from Eric Garcia. The ball over the top from Sergi Darder is magnificent. The control from Raúl de Tomás is wonderful, as is the finish. But the question marks over Eric Garcia's defending are pretty big. And that's not the first time we've said it this season. Do you want to talk about Eric Garcia?
Only very briefly. Just to say that there's been a marked improvement in Barcelona's performances in recent weeks, and in particular in the reliability of them. And I don't want to be over-reductionist about this, but it is worth noting that has been without Eric Garcia. Now, I don't think that's purely being about him not being there, but it's about settling in a partnership of Piqué and Araujo. And I've never truly been able to understand why Araújo wasn't just the automatic first choice at centre-back anyway. And all the more so found it hard to understand when Eric García was. Now, Eric clearly has, he's good on the ball. I think he understands the game well in terms of bringing the ball out. Positionally, I think there are some really significant issues. Now, it's possible that we can look at him a little bit like we do with Busquets when we analyse Busquets, and we've done this a lot over the last couple of years, and look at it as a systemic thing. That if the system is functioning, you'll say, wow, what a good player. But if it breaks down, perhaps he doesn't kind of cover the wider spaces particularly well, which of course Ronald Araújo, who's a more physical defender, a quicker defender, I think does.
Yes, I don't think there's too many people who would argue with that analysis, Sydney, although Barca are in trouble in terms of the centre-back position, in terms of injuries, because
yes,
Araujo is out. Obviously, Piqué is going to be suspended because he got sent off in this game as well. And let's see how Lenglet and Umtiti are. They do still play there. And Eric García is perhaps going to be the only man standing for the next game or so. But let's see. I'm conscious of the fact that we've got so much to pack into today's programme and only a limited amount of time. I'll let you in on a little secret, guys. We're recording before Carlo Ancelotti's press conference in the Champions League. We've got to be done by then. So we are a little bit short for time, which is why we're gonna move on. If you do have a question that you want us to talk about, if there's something that we don't talk about, you want us to do it, send us a question and we'll answer it on the Q&A pod tomorrow. Just briefly on Raul de Tomás, 13 league goals, only Karim Benzema has scored more than him in La Liga. He is someone who is absolutely delivering this season when there were some question marks about whether he could do it in La Liga. Yes, he'd scored a lot of goals one season for Rayo Vallecano, but we'd never really seen him thrive at the top level. And there's no question about that now at the moment, is there?
Absolutely right. And I think it's true that we did have those doubts that we weren't sure whether he really was a first division player or really was a top first division player. And he actually has done. I just want to go through something for you.
Okay.
And because I'm just looking at the stats here because I was conscious of what I thought was the case. I'm looking at the stats to confirm it. 13 goals. And unless I'm reading this wrong, in 13 different games.
Uh-huh.
I think.
Okay.
So this is not a guy
who's
got 13 goals because he's had a couple of lucky splurges.
Yes.
You know, because 1 week, for argument's sake, and apologies for saying this, Levante fans, you know, 1 week he's beaten up on Levante.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's not because of that. So it's one against Atletico, it's one against Alaves, one against Real, one against Cardiff, one against Elche, one against Athletic, one against Granada, one against Levante again, one against Valencia, one against Elche, one against Cardiff, one against Betis, and last night against Barcelona.
Okay. Very detailed breakdown of Raul de Tomás's 13 league goals this season. He is on fire. We've got to move on and talk about the game of the season. You were at Espanyol Barça, by the way, which was a really, really fantastic game to be at. What the bloody hell was Atletico Madrid Getafe like to be at? Because let's just set the context of this fixture. Atletico Madrid had absolutely dominated Getafe for the last 10 years. Last 20 meetings in all competitions, 17 wins, 3 draws, 1 goal conceded in the last 20 matches.
Yeah.
And they concede twice inside the first half an hour of this game. It was just a unbelievably ridiculous. It was a ridiculous game.
It was. The aggregate score, I think, was 36-1 coming into this game since Simeone's been in charge. And that was completely blown out the window. I'm going to say something that's going to sound a little bit like a killjoy, but let me say it anyway. This was wild and it was fun and it was gloriously silly. But it's also true that there were more goals than football. That is also true.
What do you mean by that?
Bear in mind that, and Simeone said this after the game, and you might well argue that, well, of course he says this because it suits him. But he was fundamentally right when he said, look, Getafe scored 2 goals with 2 penalties that came from almost nothing. And that's true. 2 handballs. That Atletico had a penalty which they missed. And they didn't really, it's not like they created loads of chances when they took that early lead, but it did seem like they were completely in control. So this was a game that I kind of felt like there were more goals being scored than should have been scored.
Okay.
You see what I mean? Okay. I don't think I remember more than a couple of saves in the whole game, for example. I don't remember it being a game. I don't have this image of, apart from the unbelievable penalty save, of course, from David Sodier, which was absolutely fantastic. I don't have kind of an image of, oh, another chance wasted, or another chance just gone, another one just gone. And in fact, at 3-3, there's a moment, and Simeone said post-game this, but there's also a bit of a camera that catches him doing it, which is interesting because it obviously confirms what he said, but it's interesting to see it like this. There's a moment with about 15 minutes to go where he shouts at Koke, and he basically says, one. You will get one. There will be one chance. There doesn't need to be more than one chance. And as it turned out, they did get one because they weren't really piling into Getafe late on, by which point, of course, they were down to 10 men. Because you get a horrific challenge from Felipe. Like a challenge that nobody could question. It's like, yeah, all right, off. In fact, you should be sent off four times for that. And they kind of, it's not like they were overwhelming Getafe, but they got there in the end, 4-3. Two home games in a row now where they've scored the winner into extra, well, not quite into extra time. Last time it was 96 or something. This time it was 89th, so not quite in extra time. When they, something has, we said this all season, but look, Atletico Madrid, the team where it used to be 0-0, 1-1, 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, 0-0, 1-1, 1-0, 0-0, all this. It's now been 4-3, 4-2, 3-2 and 2-2 in the last four league games. Always watch Atletico.
So this is much better than this version of Atletico Madrid. Oh,
it's much more fun.
For us.
It's more. I must confess that I did actually ask Simeone that. I said, look, this is a lot of fun for us, but what's it like for you? and he said, well, look, man, he said, as managers, we don't really want it to be like this because we want control. We want to understand that we know what's happening. He said, but you know, I'm sure the fans thought it was much better this way.
Yeah, he'd much prefer a 1-0 to a 4-3. But there we go. There is this absolutely ludicrous stat going around about Atletico Madrid's goals conceded this season, which is that they've conceded 33 so far this season, which is more than in the entirety of every previous season under Diego Pablo Simeone. So they've conceded 33 goals already this season, and there's still 15 games to go, and they've already conceded more than in every other full season under Simeone. That just gives you an idea of what we're dealing with here with this version of Atletico Madrid this season.
Yeah, and it tells you something that there is a very, very significant disconnect. We've used the phrase identity crisis all year, and I absolutely, absolutely think that's right. Not necessarily because they don't know what they want to be, or rather, Diego Simeone doesn't know what he wants to be, but with the players he's got, he's not convinced he can be, and he's not convinced that they're following him. As I've said before, and I still stand by it, part of their problem is that they are league champions. That changes emotionally everything.
I was doing a show last night with Graham Hunter, who had a little delve into the stats and saw that Savic and Jimenez had only started 10 games together this season. And when they have played, the goals conceded have been considerably less. So there has been that aspect as well.
We said this 10 days or so ago, and because at that point, I think they'd only started 8 or 9. Well, they must have done because it's 2 since then, and hence Graham's stats. And I think they'd only lost one of them. And as you say, their defensive record was much better. But then they went to the Camp Nou and conceded 4.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Yeah. OK, let's see how Atletico Madrid managed to calm things down a little bit. I think even the fans at this point would take a little 1-0, just grind out a little 1-0 just to get back to keeping clean sheets and perhaps being defensively solid. They're in action midweek, a postponed game against Levante, which is probably just about the kind of game that you want right now.
If they concede goals against Levante, then they really will think there's something horribly wrong here. Mind you, Levante score goals. It's the defensive side of things that's a problem with Levante. Yeah.
Yes. Quick word about Getafe as well. They were so close to winning this game. They definitely deserved something from this game, I think. But they'll still be pretty happy with how they approached it.
To be honest, post game they were all relatively calm about the fact that they'd been beaten. I think that was to be expected. They weren't happy about it, and actually a couple of the players coming up the tunnel were kind of shouting, sort of, you know, how can this keep happening? You know, how could this happen? And this is a disgrace, and this isn't fair, sort of thing. But more sort of shouted in the air rather than shouted at anyone in particular. Mm-hmm. But I think there is a fundamental fact there, which is that they know they're on the right tracks, they know they're playing well. Ennis now scores twice more, admittedly they're both from the penalty spot, but that's 11 goals now for him, and he's been brilliant, and I think there is a sense that they're absolutely in the right place.
Certainly are. Much better than when Kike Sanchez Flores took over, of course. Quick word, obviously, about Villarreal and Real Madrid. It finished 0-0 at the Estadio de la Cerámica. We saw Gareth Bale play. a match of football. Yeah. His first game since August. Hadn't played for 6 months. He started with Karim Benzema out injured. Started in a central forward position. And, well, he actually did pretty well, to everyone's surprise. Yeah.
Look, I was on the radio on Saturday afternoon doing the game immediately before this one. And so there was a bit of build-up to the Real Madrid game during the commentary of the game I was doing, which was the Cadiz game. So maybe that's to be expected, not just because it's Real Madrid, because the Cadiz game was not very interesting. But there was this kind of collective sort of shaking of the head that they're giving Gareth Bale a go, and how on earth can you play him and how can you justify this? And there's a real kind of moral crusade against Bale at the moment. Mm. But then when it kind of, we start stripping it down a little bit to the practicalities and you know what this says about what he believes that Jovic can do, maybe what it says about Hazard as well. But one of the things that I don't think anyone picked up on, and or at least I felt that no one was picking up on it, and so I did basically. I said, well, look, the last two games, Isco's played as false nine and Asensio's played as false nine. So if you look at this lineup, and today Gareth Bale is playing as false nine, not on the wing, which they seem to think he was going to play on the wing. And I was saying, oh, I think he's going to be a false nine. And the point I said to him was that of those three, he's the least false of the false nines. Mm-hmm. He's the one that can most be a number nine. And if you don't trust in Jovic, for whatever reason, I must admit, I do find it baffling. If you're not going to use Mariano and if Benzema's injured, I also think this was partly a test run for Paris, or at least a let's have a look at him and see if this can work. And I thought he played all right. He could have had three goals. I think you could argue that he was unlucky on two of them, and one of them, the closer in one that he tried to nudge past the keeper, perhaps he could have finished better. But he played all right. I must admit, I had to double check this afternoon. I was actually saying this to Al just now before we came on air. 28th of August, the last time he played. Mm-hmm. Like somewhere in my mind, I'd sort of told myself, oh, he must have had a few minutes here and there. It's literally nothing. No. It's 28th of August and nothing since then. He hasn't played at the Bernabeu since pre-pandemic.
Wow, yes, of course. And yet he lasted 73 minutes and was probably Real Madrid's most dangerous player alongside Vinicius. Let's see if he gets some minutes in Paris tomorrow night. Real Madrid in action in the Champions League, of course, against PSG. Villarreal holding Real Madrid to a 0-0 draw for the second time this season. And I say Villarreal holding Real Madrid because, well, certainly in the first half, Villarreal were considerably better team, as it was in the Bernabeu as well earlier on this season. But again, they couldn't find a way into the goal when they were dominating the game.
There is something that I was really struck by in the first half. I am struggling genuinely, and obviously, look, there will be examples that I just can't think of. So I'm not stating this as an absolute statement of fact, but I'm stating this in terms of I can't think of an example. I can't remember the last time I saw a team get so close to the other team's goal. And I mean physically, I don't mean in terms of chances. How often it seemed that Villarreal were pulling the ball back to each other inside the six-yard box. Mm-hmm. How kind of geographically close they seemed to be to the Madrid goal all the time, which actually didn't translate into as many chances as it should have done. Because you'd get someone to the byline and it pull back and it would go behind someone. Or that the final pass would be a poor one, or it'd get caught under someone's feet. But Villarreal were deep inside Real Madrid's penalty area for a lot of that half. It wasn't that they were pushing them back and getting some shots around the edge of the box. They were getting shots inside the box, or at least getting possession inside the box. And I'd love to know the stats. I'd love to know if that's borne out, if in terms of action areas, this is the highest a team has ever played, if you see what I mean. Mm. Because it felt like it. But again, they didn't create as many clear chances as they might. There's a couple of saves, there's a shot against the post, and they were really, really good, I felt, Villarreal with the ball until perhaps sometimes that last pass. And then, as you say, the second half was completely different. Mm. And it was different to the game at the Bernabeu, because at the Bernabeu, Villarreal attacked Madrid and created chances coming in at them from the left-hand side into space. This time, it was pushing them right back and then going into them. And it was a different approach. And I think this tells you something about the variety that Villarreal have, how well-worked they are. But it still sometimes feels like there's that little something missing. Mm. And I must confess, I thought Real Madrid's response in the second was very good indeed. Mm. I thought after a first half in which, and Ancelotti used the phrase, lack of ganas, there was no desire, there's no will, there was no sort of sense of commitment or concentration. And that was true. This was a really kind of whatever performance from Madrid. And yet in the second half, and it's not that easy normally to just turn it on, I thought they were really quite good in the second half, Real Madrid.
Yes, certainly. Let's see how Real Madrid get on this week in the Champions League, potentially without Karim Benzema. Even if he does play, he's not going to be 100%. Villarreal, of course, they're in the Champions League as well. Still, they've got a fixture to look forward to in a couple of weeks against Juventus. Before we dwell on the Segunda División and Oviedo and what they did. Shall we talk about that, Sid? No.
Let's just very briefly say, I was watching this on my way to Barcelona for the derby, and I managed to get just enough reception on the train to watch this game. And I'll be honest, I was pretty tired the night before the Atletico game had finished very late. Oviedo go into a 3-0 lead, and I've got the laptop on, and Oviedo 3-0, and I'm getting more and more tired, and I fall asleep. I get woken up by the third Huesca goal. I can't believe you've done this, you bastards.
Yes, they did manage to do it. So we will not dwell on on that. I'll give you some other top lines from the Segunda in just a moment. But I feel like we've got to talk about Nabil Fekir, who scored twice in Betis's 4-2 win at Levante. And it's interesting. I mean, I think I've been banging this drum for a while now. Producer Al has put this in the production notes as well. And my editor, Carlos, on the show last night in La Liga TV was saying this in my ear as well. And the question is, how close is Nabil Fekir to being the best player in La Liga?
Well, at the very start of the season, we said it was him and Vinicius and Benzema, didn't we? And at the start, and he actually had a little lull in the middle, Fekir. I think right now, given that Benzema's injured, at the moment, and admittedly...
I mean, right now, this week, you mean?
Well, right now, as in the last month or so, the last 4 or 5 weeks, he's the best player in Spain. And but that's part of the accumulative effect of the whole season. Obviously, across the whole season, I think it's still Benzema or maybe Vinicius. But I think he's brilliant. And the great thing about, there are many good things about him. But he's a lot of fun to watch as well. He's not just a good player. He's a really enjoyable player. He combines well with other people. He does technical things that others don't do, but he's got the physicality as well. He's got an eye for a pass, although that's not really what most defines his game. He can finish, but that's not really what defines his game either. There's just kind of a presence about him that sort of says, shit happens when this guy has the ball, you know? And it's just, he's just lovely to watch. Really, really enjoy watching him play.
He's top three in La Liga for assists, key passes per game, through balls per game. And he's actually played a lot of minutes.
Yes, he has. Yeah, because he's been reliable and consistent too, yeah.
He basically plays every game.
Yeah. And I don't know how high he'll be on completed dribbles, but I imagine that will be pretty high as well.
I can tell you, completed dribbles. Yeah, he's right up there on completed dribbles as well, Sydney. He's a guy who is just a lot of fun to watch, as we said. And long may that continue. There was always a question mark a little bit about his attitude, about whether he sort of turned it on when he fancied it against the big sides. But this season and last season as well, he's added consistency.
In a way, that becomes self-perpetuating.
A little bit.
If you have a team that plays well, if you've got a player, you say, well, he only plays well in the big games. You get a team that starts playing well and therefore creates a demand for itself, a need to win. That, by definition, turns games that previously might not have been seen as big ones into big ones. And so it becomes self-perpetuating. And I think that's been very good for him. And by the way, quietly... And because he's always quiet, Manuel Pellegrini, what a manager.
I mean, yes. And it's not just what he's done at Betis. I mean, he's been a very good manager. Yeah. Everywhere he's gone. Yeah. Everywhere he's gone. He's done really, really well. But he has done it in this quiet, unassuming way, which makes you kind of, if not forget about him, but maybe just overlook him a little bit. But we really, really, really shouldn't. What a job he's doing with this Betis side, who are absolutely flying. Third in La Liga. They've got the Europa League as well this week to look forward to. They're playing Zenit St. Petersburg. And they're also in the semi-finals of the Copa del Rey. So an extraordinary season for Los Verde Blancos. I suppose the only negative thing is that Sevilla are above them in the table, despite having this incredible season. But maybe they won't be too bothered about that.
I tell you, if they finish in a Champions League place, and I'm not saying necessarily win it, but get further than Sevilla in Europe.
Yes.
And win a cup. And I'm saying a lot of big things here.
A lot of ifs.
They don't care if Sevilla are ahead of them.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't think they'll care about that, because I think they'll see the cup and Europe as being bigger in terms of a head-to-head sense of season.
Okay, before we go, we mentioned Oviedo throwing away that 3-0 lead in the Segunda to draw 3-3 with Huesca. Elsewhere, Eibar drew 0-0 with Fuenlabrada. That means their lead at the top is down to just a point after second place Almeria won 1-0 at Malaga. This week in the Champions League, on Tuesday, you've got PSG against Real Madrid. On Wednesday, you've got that rearranged La Liga game, Atletico Madrid against Levante. Then on Thursday, big night of European football for Spanish sides. Barcelona against Napoli, Zenit St. Petersburg against Betis, Sevilla Dinamo Zagreb, and RB Leipzig against La Real. So loads of games for us to look forward to this week involving Spanish sides. We'll be talking about all of them on our bonus podcast at patreon.com/TSFP. So why don't you come and join us and ask us a question as well for tomorrow's Q&A pod. If you'd rather not, don't worry. We'll be back here, as we always are, next Monday, talking about Spanish football. So you can join us then. Adios.
Cheerio.